Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hi, can I ask all of you listening a favor? Would you mind rating and reviewing my book, WTF Just Happened? A Sciencey Skeptic Explores Grief, Healing, and Evidence of an Afterlife on Amazon? Authors depend so much on ratings. They are crucial to the algorithm and Amazon making sure this book is seen. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it. Thank you.
Today's guest is William Donius. William and I met at the Forever Family Foundation Grief Transformation Retreat this past July 2023. He came to this exploration of afterlife evidence in a really unique way by developing a methodology for unlocking innovation, intuition, and creativity that engages first the left side of the brain and then the right side. He spent the past 10 years conducting research with hundreds of test subjects to determine if this methodology could be applied to corporate America. The research findings stated that yes, they could. And this led to his book, a New York Times and Wall Street Journal bestseller, Thought Revolution, and a TEDx talk, Unlocking the Brain's Hidden App, as well as teaching a workshop at Esalen on this topic, as well as to many corporations and retreats and individuals. Very interestingly, as he has gone further with this research and this methodology, he's noticed that this exercise can open up intuitive and even possibly psychic and mediumship abilities. He has some very interesting insights that I think all of you will love learning about. There is a content warning for this episode. We do touch upon childhood sexual abuse. I also discuss some hospital details that were kind of a little traumatic for me when I visited my dad there. Welcome to What the Fuck Just Happened. I'm your host, Liz Enten. If you listened to the intro, you know my story. If not, here's a brief summary. I'm a sciencey skeptic, and when my dad died, I took a shot in the dark and decided to investigate if there was any possible evidence of an afterlife. I assumed that was as realistic as Santa Claus, but I was desperate. However, I was so blown away by what I discovered that I wrote a book and launched this podcast. In this podcast, I'll be talking to some fairly normal people about some really weird shit. I speak with everyone from psychic mediums and afterlife researchers to ordinary people who've had some inexplicable experiences. So come, listen. There's no need to draw any final conclusions. Keep an open mind and wonder, what the fuck just happened? Hi, everyone. Today, I am talking with William Donius. I call him Bill. He is author of a book called The Thought Revolution, which really gets into left brain, right brain, all the stuff everyone here knows I'm pretty obsessed with. And we met at the Forever Family Foundation Grief Retreat in July. And he took us through some pretty remarkable exercises, and he can take over and introduce himself. Hi, Bill. Thanks so much for coming on.
Hi, Liz. And I know you as Liz, and I know your full name is Elizabeth. So we're both going by the shorter version today. Wonderful. Thank you for the invitation. It's great to be here with you. Really enjoyed connecting with you this summer.
I did too. And so tell us a little bit first about your background.
Well, I suppose that I'm looking back now, although it was unintended, I suppose that I've had the Forrest Gump of kind of business backgrounds, because I went to business school and then was in about five or six different industries, including television production and healthcare and management consulting, public relations, healthcare sales, and then spent 20 years in banking. So that was where most of my corporate career was, in a bank where I worked there and rose through the ranks to the role of CEO and took the company public. And we grew exponentially, actually eightfold over a 20-year period, and did well enough, I guess. I was blessed financially to be able to retire at 50. And I pursued this mostly because there was this opportunity to do this work, which I was interested in, this passion project. And it took me 3 years of research, interviews, writing to write the book. But also I realized my life was kind of out of balance and I needed to reset. There was a lot that I wanted to do and a lot of places that I wanted to see. And I was already 50. So I thought, gosh, I better get busy. I had spent so much of my time in service of the bank and shareholders and customers, and that it was time to focus on myself. And then also the aspiration was to do what I could to hopefully make the world a little bit better place. And in my view, helping people get unstuck is how to do that. So it's, and in fact, it's been a great 15 years, hard to believe, since then, that I've been in this space doing this work with individuals and organizations for the past 15 years.
First of all, what is the theory of the thought revolution?
Yeah, so the theory is that it's possible to activate the neural pathways and tap into the right side of the brain. And it's okay, so why would we want to? Well, the right side of the brain controls intuition, problem solving, artistry, music, creativity, higher consciousness. It's all those kind of very rich places in the brain that Nobel Prize winning discovery in 1981 by Roger Sperry was that we have lateralization in the brain. We have these two hemispheres that they do different things. They're all, there's been many discoveries since 1981. And so some even debunked this theory. But the team at the University of Chicago that I worked with and helped me, they were one of the 11 neuroscientists, psychologists, psychiatrists on my journey that helped me in the writing of the book to make sure it was appropriate and accurate. And their thought was that, you know, many of them still believe that this process makes sense because it works and the results kind of speak for themselves. The left side of the brain is the linear, logical, rational part. 92% of us are right-handed, which is controlled by the left side of the brain. So in my view, it sort of makes sense that we kind of operate our lives in this very linear, logical way, which is great, you know, for putting food on the table, gas in the car. Maybe not so much or as helpful when we're stuck or we have a problem. Something's not working in our lives. We don't know why. We've tried other ways, you know, and we have a tendency as humans to do the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result, right? Which Einstein warned us about. So it's how do we break through these patterns? And that applied to me. I was exhibit A as a 38-year-old who was not breaking through and getting success in my dating life. And I realized something was probably wrong psychologically, but I didn't know what it was and just kept, again, you know, the Jerry Seinfeld of dating. And so I went into therapy, and a year later, my therapist gave me the book by Dr. Lucia Capaglione, Recover Your Inner Child. And that in one weekend unlocked what I didn't figure out in the previous, you know, 39 years. So that was really helpful to break through and get that awareness. And then it didn't really occur to me that this could be a tool that I could use in business as well, in banking specifically. So when I found that it was helpful in banking as well and problem solving strategy, then I thought, well, maybe this could also help others, because they certainly weren't going to read Lucia's book, as great as it is. It's unless you've been abused, it's a very hard read. And so I wanted to write something that and create something that potentially everybody could use to just be a better, more creative problem solver, to get unstuck. And there's areas in life where they're finding some problems. So when I saw in the 200 interviews that it worked for those, for the most part, for those 200, I thought, okay, I think this can work more broadly as a problem solving tool. So that's in a big nutshell, the big picture.
So we'll go more into that and later on how it's a tool for self-help. Ooh, I need to learn to talk today. With the topic on this podcast, it's a lot about connecting with loved ones and afterlife evidence. And what was interesting is you came to our Forever Family Foundation grief retreat and took all of us through this exercise, because I guess talk about a little bit the theory of, can this help us connect with our loved ones, ourselves?
Yeah, so thank you for that question. This does represent the newest area of exploration for me. And that conference in July was actually the first time that I had done this in a public forum. I performed or did a webinar that was with a lot of people in the previous fall that went well. There were hundreds of people on it, and they were getting good responses and writing in on the messages and so forth. So that's, I guess, why they invited me to attend in Connecticut this summer. And so the origin was, for me, was after both of my parents passed 8 years ago, I found, I guess, reaching out and thinking through how I was processing my grief, I was aware that there had been, you know, there were some signals and messages that felt like they were out there. And specifically, even 2 days after my father passed, we were carrying a mattress through the garage, my brother and I, from his extended care facility back into the home, and his car lights blinked. And I looked at my brother, I'm like, aha, very funny. And he goes, what are you talking about? And I'm like, you did that. And he goes, no, I thought you did that. And we both laughed, because here we are both carrying this super heavy mattress that we're holding, you know, going through the garage. So that was the first time. Then there were other times. And in front of one really momentous moment, I was getting ready to lead my first workshop at the Esalen Institute in Big Sur, California. And there, as I was prepping, I was thinking, gosh, it would be nice to talk to my parents. They were both passed at that point. I'm like, it'd be nice to talk to them. And, you know, just check in. And they always made me feel better, like it's going to be okay, you know, all that stuff that parents say. And just as I was thinking that, the light started blinking on the piece of furniture that was in the room, on the cabinet. And I was like, wow, that's unusual that it would be blinking right now. So I unplugged it, and then later plugged it back in again, and then started thinking, okay, let's see if that light's going to blink again. And importantly, it hadn't blinked the whole day before, so that I was there. So it started again. And then that's when I had the idea, because I'd been doing this process myself for all those years, you know, for decades. I thought, I wonder if I could try to activate my right brain and see if there's anything there. So I just wrote simply the question, is there a message for me? And then use this activation process. And indeed, God, what was a paragraph, and when I went back and reread it, it was definitely in my father's voice. And then when I signed it, it wrote with my non-dominant hand, love, Dad. When I came back to St. Louis and compared handwriting, it was almost in the exact same handwriting as his. So I was like, wow, this is really kind of a mind blower. So since then, I've experimented. I've worked with a number of other people and taught this process to them. And when it was working for them, I thought, I've come to the conclusion that I think we have this shared collective consciousness. And so it makes it possible to tap into that higher consciousness, that shared consciousness, and receive a message from the other side. In the intervening years, I also met Leslie Keene and discovered surviving death and learned about all of that. And she introduced me to Bob Ginsberg. And so that really awakened my, I guess, possibility and my sense of what's possible. And if this could work in watching your series, reading your book, and then doing a lot more reading on the topic, I became very impressed. And of course, meeting the mediums was even more compelling, like how they would have access to this and with total strangers. So it's really been super eye-opening. And I was delighted that I could offer something that people could learn to do themselves, because, you know, you can't always pick up the phone and call a medium, nor does everybody always want to pay to talk to one, you know. And so if you can get access on demand when you need it, and that I thought could be really valuable. So that's why I was, you know, delighted to offer this process into that retreat.
Yeah. And I know it's all about activating your right brain, and mediums will say, and the neuroscientific research done by people like Dr. Jeff Tarrant shows that the left side of mediums' brains tend to turn off, and the right side gets very, very activated when they're connecting mediumistically. And I think most of us, certainly myself, as everyone at Forever Family knows, my left brain never stops, never. But being such a left brainer, you know, I actually had an interesting experience doing your exercises at the retreat. I, you know, was doing the initial ones. You know, I do so much right brain exercises, and I think so logically that, you know, with the exercises, I just was being so logical, it wasn't necessarily working for me. Then we got to the part, do you have a message from your loved ones? And I'm writing while I'm analyzing, like I'm trying to do it while analyzing and trying to get a message from my dad. And then it was like, just Fran's voice came in. I mean, I'm thrilled to hear from Fran, but I was trying to connect with my dad with just such a message as I'm analyzing, with just a total Fran message. She's like, Liz, you're a pain in the ass. And it just popped into my head. And while I was trying to connect with my dad, you know, we got so many crazy signs from Fran that weekend that I was just like, that makes sense. But I was just sitting there laughing. I was like, where'd that come from? And, you know, I don't normally have that stuff happen. So it was interesting and funny and emotional. And
I can tell now, having done this work for, you know, and received messages from a number of friends and family members who have passed on, I think the number I was categorizing and cataloging all of them, I think it was up to like 26 or 27 messages over the past years, that you can really tell and feel the difference when you're and you, by what you said, it's not something that you would just write down on your own, and you can feel that quality that is where you know something else is going on, right? So that is consistent with what others have reported as well. I'm sorry, the dog is barking outside the store.
No worries. I'm usually the one with the barking dog on the podcast. You know, we're talking now about survival or connecting with your loved ones. Most of your research has been in business and finding yourself with this, which I think a lot of your stories about that add to the evidence of how this does stimulate your right brain. You know, if you could do this structurally in your life and start living more right-brained, that seems to be the way mediums live. So I'd love to hear some of the success stories that you saw with it in the business world and finding yourself as well.
Certainly. Before I answer that question, if I may, I'd like to, because it is a success outcome, I think, that validates this left and right brain notion, and as well as scientific discovery. Charles Lim did a really great TED Talk, and where he is an MIT scientist, and he put patients in an fMRI machine and with a musical instrument, and he asked them to play a piece of classical music in the first scan, and then the second time through to play, to improv and do jazz or do whatever they wanted to do. And it was just like you said about mediums. On the classical side, the left side lit up completely, and on the improv side, the right side lit up. So that, I think, is more evidence of how this worked. Also, Jill Bolte Taylor did a very good TED Talk, My Stroke of Insight, which she describes actually having a stroke, a Harvard neuroscientist herself at the time, having a stroke and being in that stroke state for 7 or 8 years, and then coming out of it and being able to describe what that was like, and it, up to saying like, oh, I didn't really want to come out of it, you know, because it was such an amazing place to be. So I think there's more, and scientists, the team at University of Chicago would say, and Dr. Murray Sherman actually said to me, and he was in the lab with Dr. Roger Sperry when they won their Nobel Prize for this work. And I was apologetic in a way, because he was saying, well, how does this work for you? What are you doing? And I said, well, I'm doing these interviews and done 200 of them. And he's like, that's research. You know, you can call it. And I was being a former banker and kind of in this, I was kind of sheepish about it. And he said, I really was motivated by what he said, because, and, you know, not being a scientist, not being a doctor, not being a psychologist, I felt like, who am I to kind of go into this space? And he said, you know, we in science get a lot of things from business and from people's lived experiences. He said, and don't wait for us as scientists. We're usually the last. We're skeptical. We're usually the last to do something. And we're just proving what's already out there, why it's happening. So don't depend on us to give you all the answers. You know, go out there, do what you want to do. If you've got a motivation to try to help people and organizations, individuals, go out and do it. And in fact, that really gave me the kind of firepower to, although I thought I would write the book and be done, what ended up happening is I wrote the book and got invitations to go on, you know, news shows and podcasts and radio shows and, you know, just being out there. But moreover, I got invited to speak at conferences, go into companies. And so perhaps the single biggest one that sticks out when you ask that question about results and how it works, this process was able to help Kawasaki reverse 7 years of declining market share. And they had already worked with some other big consulting firms I won't name for obvious reasons. But when it wasn't working with them, I was sort of the CMO confided that I was probably the man and method of last resort, because I tried everything else. And like, why not try this? So the process working with their senior executives in Japan all the way through into the US with dealers and customers, users, we collectively, using both sides of the brain, because it's not just one is good and the other not, it's a agnostic actually where good ideas come from. And in this case, they were coming from both sides. But the part that's compelling is that I found in these 15 years now that most people don't get those right, I call them right brain insights, RBIs, if you're a baseball fan, they don't get those RBIs because they don't know how to think that way. So that gets left out of the equation. So bringing all of those interesting, creative, unique possibilities into the equation makes it much more likely that the organization will solve the problem, whether it's like, why is market share declining? How do we make more money? How can we communicate better? How do we bring these teams together? Whatever it may be. So that on the business side, and I've worked with a really big, large companies, Hitachi and the Federal Reserve System and Walt Disney Studios. So working with these big teams as well as smaller ones and nonprofits to help these organizations really break through to get out of a place. And even if they're not stuck per se, like just how, what can they do to do better has been a fun and good, satisfying experience. And then I teach this, as mentioned, at the Essel Institute in the form of a personal development workshop. It's titled Meet Your Better Half, Learn How to Unlock Your Right Brain. And when over the course of a weekend, we dive deep into a number of questions. And the overarching goal is to help people figure out their highest and best purpose in life. And then also figure out areas where they're stuck or where things aren't working or with a relationship or this or that at work. And in the course of a singular weekend, people get all kinds of really helpful, even breakthrough transformational insights.
Are you able to share any breakthroughs that an individual had in their life, or is that something that's not shareable?
Yeah, one that comes immediately to mind, because I also did a podcast with her on that topic at Esalen, in Voices of Esalen. I'd done a previous one. And so we said, would it be interesting to have one where a participant talks about the value? And in this case, Nicole Longbine discovered why she was not happy as an oncology nurse, what that was about, and then what she wanted to do instead. And then she developed a plan to do it and is doing it. So that's a good example. And for others, there's a scientist actually, and I won't mention her name, but the description is she works at a global company where she's leading one of their big drug developments. And the insight that she got changed her career trajectory. And it was a very big insight. So, and it opened up all these other opportunities in this big global company for her. And she's now in the year since, 2 years since, is doing incredibly well. And then there are people that discover what happened in childhood that they were never quite aware of, and the damage that it kind of did, and kind of why they're not happy now. And we work on release, the awareness first, and then the release of that emotion, and then work on the tactical steps on, okay, what you can do to move past it.
How has this technique and the techniques you've learned changed your life?
Yeah, great question. I wouldn't probably have even thought to go down this path if it hadn't had a transformational effect on my life at age 38-ish. It really helped me understand why I was not successful in personal intimate relationships in the dating space. And I had to discover the why. And probably not super surprising, I had suffered some abuse as a kid, which I was unaware of because it happened so young. But it put in forth this whole mechanism that made it more likely in cases where, for most people, it'd be a wonderful thing when intimacy, love, sex, friendship are all coming together to make a strong bond. In the case of someone who's been abused, it is like those wires aren't connecting properly. They kind of disconnect and kind of blow things up at just the wrong time. And so when it really helped me work through that, and I've been able to have a successful relationship now 17 years, that it was wonderful to solve that problem. And then it also, because of the context, it was such a personal, intimate process that it didn't really occur to me that I could use something that I read from a book about abuse to bring into my role as a bank CEO. You know, it's just like, especially with banking being so linear, logical. And when I started using it to think differently about strategy, who I would hire, where we're going to go, how we're going to do things, posing questions, journaling, both sides of the brain, I found that I had better thoughts, better ideas, and we ended up getting way better results too. And so I don't want to completely credit it to that. I had a good team, good people, good economy, lots going on. But this, I would say, was the singularly best thing I've learned in my life.
Thank you for being so open about your personal story as well. I really appreciate that. And I think our listeners will too. I mean, life's really hard and we've all been through so much.
Yeah. And I guess it's easier as you get older and you have friends and financial security. And the reason I say share that out into business groups is that I think too many of us out there in the world, including me, I carried my therapist card for 5 years in my wallet before I actually called her. So I think there's a shaming of the need for help, going to a therapist, having a problem. We, especially men, we feel like, oh, I can get through this. I'll just tough it out, work through it. And no, that's not, I mean, you may be able to, but why? Why would you want to? Why not get help and make the progress you need, live a more authentic, intentional, happier life as a result?
Yeah, I think our society is very uncomfortable with trauma, emotions. I mean, most of us listening have bad losses, and our society's just like within 3 weeks. I know with me, they're like, you got to get back to your life. You got to be okay. And it's just, our society is not comfortable with trauma. We're set up. The mindset is pretend it didn't happen, move on.
Right. And that's our best kind of knee-jerk reaction, that if we are acting like it didn't happen, and it probably didn't. And that actually is what many who were abused do, to either, you know, intentionally or unintentionally. But it does affect their lives, their behavior. In one case, in that realm, the woman that I was doing this work with many years ago identified that there was also abuse that she was aware of, but didn't really realize the impact that it was having on her life, because we started talking about why she was overweight. And so what we ended up discovering is that she discovered was that from her right brain is that band of extra weight around her was also unwittingly serving as protection against other possible offenders, rapists, or what have you. And when she got that realization, she was like, oh, wow, this, I get it. This sort of, this makes sense. And, you know, and never put the two and two together like that before.
How does it work? Like with our brains, it sort of tucks away into the right side where we don't have language for it and comes out in actions that we're not, our language side doesn't understand.
Yeah, I think that, and let me clarify, make sure I'm answering correctly. How does this process work?
Well, how does not understanding this stuff work?
Oh, I see.
No. I mean, I see it in my own life too. So I'm not saying how, I don't mean it in the tone of how would that be, but just neurologically or experientially.
Yeah, I can testify that, and also from what I've learned along the way, that scientists would say we get cultured in habits and routines. And so as a result, the older we get, the more dialed in we are, which is great in many respects because we're in that linear, logical, organized space where we can do things incrementally, faster, better. But it doesn't necessarily help us solving a problem that's way different, that's outside of our comfort zone. You know, we almost don't want to even take it on because we know how to do this. We don't know how to do this. So we just kind of go, no thanks, I'll save that for another day, or maybe it'll work itself out. And there's a lot of denial that goes on. And we also don't have the experience. It's like, you know, if you went into an art class and everybody else is painting with paintbrushes and doing great, and you've never picked up a paintbrush, you'd be like, oh, I don't really want to do that because I feel like I'm not going to be good at it and they're doing it well, or people have told me I'm not creative, so I don't want to try that. So we just tend to stay in our comfort zones, unfortunately. And this process, one of the best parts of it is it gets us out of our comfort zone before we can even really realize what's happening. And it's that right brain is so powerful. I liken it to the example of if you go, like when I started out sales after college, I rode around with my boss and he told me, don't say anything, just listen. So I would be in the meetings, not saying anything, listening. And then we'd walk out of the meeting with 5, 6, 7, 8 people, an organization we were pitching to. And he'd say, well, how do you think it went? And I was like, well, do you want me to tell you what you want to hear, or do you want me to be honest? And what I was able to do as a observer, listener, was really read the room and take in what was going on. And he, by virtue of being the speaker, presenter, focused on all that, he would often have a different feeling and sense of how the meeting went. So the right brain is like that silent voice. It's like the second person writing along in those meetings because it doesn't have a way to express itself specifically. I think we do get those, you know, what Freud said about dreaming, when they come through, we can't suppress them in our subconscious anymore. So I think it does come through at times through dreams, or we get intuitive flashes, oh, I need to do this, or I need to call this person, or what about this? And it generally happens when we're in the shower or walking down a country road or listening to music, because the default mode network in the brain can take over when we're doing a low level task. You know, those other ideas can come through because our left brain is kind of busy, you know, mowing the lawn or folding the clothes or doing whatever that might be.
You ever wonder what mediums do with their free time? How about a 30-something-year-old gay medium living in New York City? Well, in this podcast, you're about to find out. Welcome to Ghost Daddy, a place where LGBTQ+ spiritual people and our cis-hetero allies, of course, have a place to just be themselves and spread their wisdom. This is the new face of spirituality. None of that love and light, toxic positivity crap. So pour yourself a vodka soda, open up your mind, and start listening. You can listen to the Ghost Daddy podcast anywhere where you listen to podcasts.
Hey, everyone. I'm really excited to let you know about the Science and Spirituality Salons I'm now hosting. During these intimate events, a scientifically verified psychic medium will give all of you readings, and I will give a talk on the science and evidence that changed my mind about an afterlife. This will also be an amazing opportunity to get to meet some of you in person or virtually, and to share more about all the science and data that transformed my worldview and got me through my worst days. These can be hosted in your home, in a nearby cafe with a private room, or they can even be virtual. I've hosted a few already, and they were really special, fascinating, emotional, evidential. So if you're interested in getting a small group together over dinner, brunch, drinks, coffee, to learn more about the science and to get evidential medium readings, send me an email at hello@wtfjusthappened.net and put science and spirituality in the title.
So I thought of two things. First, I just want to ask, because I don't know if people would be a little concerned about this. You know, some of the memories you talked about coming out are very, very traumatic, and they're not easy. I'm just going to share a little openly with my audience, trigger warning for people who've had bad losses, but I just had kind of a flash the other day of a horrible memory I'd blocked. And after having it, I noticed I suddenly was a lot more in workflow, but there was the day, I can't believe I didn't remember this, but you know, we'd been visiting my father in the hospital and more the recovery floors. And suddenly they're like, oh, he's on a different floor. And it had a very different energy. It was the people who are not, it wasn't hospice, but the next step's hospice. And I just had completely forgotten. It was like suddenly all of it flashed in, the smells and seeing him. And I thought I was in the wrong room because he no longer looked like him. It was just, it was like one of the most horrifying memories. And I completely blocked that whole day out. And all that came back to me. And I did notice it was really just the most horrifying flashes. And then I was much more in workflow. Like, it was like something. It was like trying to get in and interrupting. But it's, I think my brain allowed it to come in at a time in my life or a moment when I could suddenly process it. Maybe a year ago, I would have been on the floor unable to function. So what types of protections do people have? Because you did bring up people getting into some very traumatic memories.
Yeah. So I think if there are things that surface that someone is uncomfortable with, doesn't understand, needs help with, it does make a ton of sense to talk to a therapist. You know, there's so many resources available now online, even with BetterHelp. There's, you know, you don't want to do this on your own, especially if it's something you don't feel comfortable with. I've learned that to your earlier notion of, you know, feeling a little bit out of sorts, really great question that I've learned to use myself even all these years later, because sometimes I don't know, I can't figure out if I'm feeling off on a certain day. I'll write the question, why am I feeling off today? Like, what's going on? And then pose that, write it, and then pose that to my right brain, activate the neural pathways, get to that right brain. And then I generally find something that I was generally it's something I didn't expect. Sometimes it is something I expect. You know, it's like the obvious. Oh, you've just been burning it at both ends for the last 4 days. Or it may be something like you're actually remembering something that happened yesterday is causing a lagging effect and it's kind of weighting you down a little bit, you know, and it'll be very specific about what that is. And then I'll say, okay, well, what do I need to do to release that, to let go of it and to be able to move on and to recharge, re-energize? And then I'll oftentimes get some very tactical tips from the right side of my brain as well.
So it's this other part of our brain, and you mentioned the parts where we have intuitions, oh, I should be doing this. And I know I've had moments of that, maybe if I'm doing an artistic project or running or walking, very meditative, I'll have this thought and I know it's right and I push it away. And then 5 years later, it's like, that was the right thing. I was delayed. And some of the stuff I've looked back on were stuff early in my research that mediums had said to me. And I was like, no, like you're going to be writing a book. No, I'm not. What are you talking about? You know, you're going to be going really far with this spiritual stuff. I'm like, I don't even believe it. That's such bullshit. Do you think mediums are kind of psychics? I mean, the information I gave actually tended to be more psychic than I just said, the mediumistic. But do you think there's a way they're tapping into that part of our brain that this is, we don't know enough of neuroscience for me to ask this question properly. So I am going to do a very cobbled together version of this question, but it seems there's parts of our right brain, memories are stored, that our left brain and ways we apply them to our life starts to get more and more access to through exercises such as this. And very intuitive people are living that way. Anyway, do you think mediums are tapping into that blocked aspect of our brain that we're just learning to access?
Simple, short answer, yes. And I can share with you, I also had the experience 25 years before it happened, where a medium that I was talking to, a psychic medium, told me that I would write a book, and or actually even he specifically said two books. And so I, given how difficult the first one was, I hope that the version that I did, which was an update to the original book, counts as the second book in a way. But it seemed so strange because that wasn't anything I aspired to do, wanted to do. I was working in banking at the time, and it just seemed so kind of one-off and unusual. I didn't even know what the topic would be. I said, what, and I was beginning to teach at the School of Banking. So I'm like, is it going to be a book on banking? And he's like, oh no, it's going to be something very different and in a completely different genre. And I was like, God, what the hell could that be? So I didn't know. So yes, I think in my take on your question is, I think that in my view, we choose this body and this incarnation and this lifetime to learn certain lessons. And so in making that choice, you can kind of see what that projection could look like if you've got the gift to see that. And the right brain can see that, I think, in parts or chunks. I think mediums who are gifted can see that trajectory and then be able to identify that that could happen along the way. It doesn't mean that it will, but it means that it maybe could happen along the way, because we have free will and fate intervenes and all kinds of other things happen.
Do you think mediums and psychics and remote viewers, other people with these types of abilities, would it be beneficial to them to do these exercises to develop their skills further?
The short answer there is also yes. I worked with one of the mediums that was with us in Connecticut, Joe Peretta, who has since become a friend. I invited him to assist me at Esalen in Big Sur, California. And so he spent an entire weekend. After he did the exercise in Connecticut, he did a whole weekend's worth of work taking on different questions about his life potential. And he reported back that he found that it felt to him like it was the same place that he goes to when he's reading somebody. He feels like it's in that same part of his brain from that where that information is coming from. He has no idea. The information comes out, and in this case, you know, he's writing answers with his non-dominant hand, and it's more than a handwriting exercise. It has to be the right brain activation. So you have to suspend disbelief to allow yourself to get there, to get to that state of flow, because it's a different way of thinking. It's not conventional thinking where you have a question, you answer it. This is your ask a question. You just wait. It may be 5 seconds, maybe 60 seconds for an answer to flow from brain to hand to page. And so he reported that he got insights using this process that he was otherwise unaware of. So I think the point is that mediums can help and read others, but they don't necessarily get that same wisdom. They can't read themselves, I guess, is I think part of it. I don't know if that's universally true, but I've heard that from people before that doesn't apply to them. And then one other comment to link to that is when you were talking about intuition a moment ago, I think that because in the moments in the years prior where I would have these intuitive thoughts, I think part of it is that the fact that they're swirling around in our brain and it's a thought that we have, it's fleeting, and then it's kind of gone. And importantly, we haven't captured it on paper. Means that it's elusive and it doesn't feel as significant or as meaningful or even as real as something we write down. So part of, I think, this process is the ability to capture those ideas from that state of flow, presumably from the right side of the brain, but capturing it on paper that we can see it, look at it, and even look back on it years later and go, oh, wow, I wrote that, you know, 2 years ago, 2 months ago, 2 weeks ago. And so the more that happens and the more we validate what we're getting, the more likely we are to trust it and continue doing it.
Does this exercise work really well for left brain thinkers, very left brain thinkers, as well as right brain thinkers? I mean, well, you already mentioned right brain thinkers, but like for a super left brain person who just basically feels they don't even have access or very minimal access to their right brain, will this still work?
Short answer there is maybe. And what I'm qualifying it by is if somebody is a super type A and, you know, super linear logical, but they're also very controlling in that type A kind of sense, it can still work for them, but it's going to take extra time, work, patience to allow that to happen, because they're going to be asked a question, you know, what's the highest and best purpose of my life? And they're going to be thinking, I just answered that question. Why would I do it another time and come up with a different answer? So that they have to,
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know anyone like that.
And I'm a bit like that myself, so I totally get it. But we have to quiet our minds long enough and give ourselves the space, suspend disbelief long enough that we allow it to happen. So it's like almost like you're telling somebody who's never ridden a bicycle, oh, go just jump on that bicycle and start riding. You know, and then it's like, oh, am I going to fall off? How am I going to balance? Blah, blah, blah. And so you need some training wheels maybe initially to steady that initial ride and get the confidence and understand the feeling of balance, and then it's easier. But I would say in general, about 95% of the people that I've done this with, which number now over 30,000 over 15 years in workshops, conferences, meetings, you know, through all the various sources, my guess would be 95% can do it. And the other qualification is that it's unfortunate, but it does kind of make sense scientifically from what I've learned, that older people have a tougher time. And by that, I mean people over 70, 75, 80. The older someone is, the less likely they are to get this. And I think it's because they're just very dialed in. And that was true with my own mother that I did this work with in her late 70s. And she read the book when it first came out, and then she practiced it at home, wasn't working. And I went over to her house, sat with her, and we worked on it. And then after about 15, 20, 30 minutes, she was able to get it, and then had a really amazing breakthrough idea around why she was unwilling to go into a senior care living facility that hadn't occurred to her before. So that idea actually was helpful for her, but it was even more helpful for me because I was really actually upset with her and them that they weren't doing it. They both had Parkinson's and their health was in decline and they were in danger being in a home alone and they didn't want people coming in to help and they just were unwilling to change. And when she got the, when I was posing, when it started working for her, then I thought, oh, good, I'm going to use this to my advantage and try to figure out why she doesn't want to go into some sort of residential care facility. And when she wrote Tom, that singular word, we both kind of teared up. And what that meant is she did not want to explain to 200 people, 300, 400 people at a new facility, all new people, why her son Tom committed suicide at age 23. She didn't want to relive that over and over and over again at every meal. She'd be asked, how many kids do you have? And, oh, how did the one die? When we got that, I totally got it. And I respected that. And she was able to make it to within a couple of weeks of when she passed in her home.
Those are the memories that Barry and
that's kind of my point is when we really need the help. This is almost like the hand of God coming in. It's that higher consciousness. It's connected to our spiritual path, our soul's purpose. And it's so, I mean, you can use it for garden variety things like, oh, where do I want to go on vacation this year? Or why don't I get along with my coworker? Or oh, can I get along better with my spouse? But the really high payoff is in a question where we just haven't solved it. And it's something really important. That's where you get that's where the big breakthroughs are really incredibly important, I think.
Would this also be somewhat of a struggle in a different way for very highly right brain people? Because the left brain part isn't, you know, they're not as in touch with that.
Possibly is the short answer. But I what I found in the 200 interviews and in the years since is that right brain people sometimes that are more, you know, granted everybody's everything, but somebody who's right, more right brain oriented, either A, they tend to get more logical, linear stuff when they're using this. And that's also true for left-handed dominant people. But then they also seem to get also surprisingly good answers. And they're even more surprised by it because they say, well, I'm already a really creative person. But then they may get a solution that they're like, wow, this is really helpful. And then probably the most unusual example was the participant who is a famed award-winning novelist and is ambidextrous. So when I asked her how she writes her novels, she said, well, I write them, my more dominant hand is my right hand. I write my novels right hand, long hand, write them out. And I said, oh, okay. And I'm simultaneously editing in the margin with my left. I was like, what? Is that possible? And I was so stunned by that. I was like, bullshit, really? And she said, yeah. And I said, okay, prove it. I want to see it. And sure enough, she wrote a paragraph and then was making edits at the same time in the margin. So most people can't do a circle with one hand and a square with the other. And so Leonardo da Vinci famously could write with one hand and paint with the other simultaneously. So, you know, people's brains work differently. And so the payoff on that story with that writer is that even with her, when I asked her what she planned to write on about that summer, because she had taken a house in Michigan for 6 weeks and had an idea in mind. And when she went to her less dominant hand, presumed right brain, she wrote something down that I could see, you know, she smiled and said, wow, this is a really good idea. She goes, I can already tell and feel that this, I'm going to make this the topic that I'm going to write about this summer. And she was kidding. She goes, well, this just changed my whole summer. So it's, that's what's so amazing And it was, I guess, what continues to energize me to be in those places, in those moments with people and organizations as they're getting these breakthroughs. Because it's not like, you know, the typical coach or consultant coming in and say, oh, I think you should do this, or based on the research, I think you should do that. This is really, you know, the genius, the inner genius, as the subtitle of the book, Thought Revolution, How to Unlock Your Inner Genius, is tapping into their inner genius. And when it's their idea, when it was her idea about what she was going to write about, she's a lot more excited about it than me saying, oh, why don't you write about this? That's part of the, I think, the continued kind of interesting evolutionary part of this work that makes it kind of exciting to be around.
Are there any insights into the part of our right brain that this taps into?
I'm talking with a neuroscientist that, you know, I'll keep her name out of it at the moment, but we are investigating, she's in the UK, and we're investigating if in fact fMRI machines and other machines, EEGs, could identify where that place is in the brain. In the course of our conversation I had with her, we were both kind of speculating, and I thought, oh, it might be interesting to ask my right brain what is actually happening when I'm tapping into my right brain. Where is that place in my brain? And for what it's worth, this is, of course, I have no idea if it's true or not. This only happened like a week ago. And the answer was hypothalamus that I got. So, and I don't know about enough. I did look up the hypothalamus after and see that it is performing a function. I have no idea whether that's valid or not. I'll turn that over to the scientists. I would love to know more. I think it's interesting. I think there are those people that don't do anything until they can see scientific proof. So it would be helpful for people like that before they even try something. But as Dr. Sherman told me, you know, the proof is if it's working for you, keep doing it. And if it's not working for you, stop doing it. So that was like, okay, that makes it pretty simple.
I just had an idea of a fun experiment, put a group of people doing these exercises. And then, you know, after maybe doing them for 15, 20, 30 minutes, try to do a sigh exercise and see how it comes in. Just, you know, like get the word that someone's thinking of, or get a memory of another person in the room. Like,
yeah.
Or even be partnered up with someone, and the way, I guess, we got partnered a little bit at Forever Family, and sort of share a little openly, and then try to see if there's psychic ways they're connecting. So that would be really fun.
Yeah, I like that. And I think there's a ton available in sort of behavioral psychological experiments too, like that, as well as, you know, going to the scientific instrumentation. So, you know, I was never one that, before I had my own experience, believed necessarily, or I hadn't even really thought much about mediumship and psychic abilities. So once you see for yourself and you experience it for yourself, then that opens up a lot of other possibilities. Because, like, how can that happen, right? Like, what's the scientific basis for that happening? Like, how could anybody know? And I liken it to probably what people in the 1400s thought is like, oh, well, don't sail your ship too far because the earth is flat. And if you go too far, you may go right off the end into oblivion. And the concept of earth and a globe and the universe, I mean, and the fact that it's round and floating out there would have just baffled people. And they would have said, it's impossible. It's just not possible that that could be the case. And yet it is, because there was stuff that we didn't understand about gravity and the world and science and the universe, that, you know, there were all these unknowns that made it impossible to think something different.
Which we still live with today, you know, starting to explore outer space.
Right.
You know, we explored the planet. Now it's time to explore other planets and other galaxies. And
yeah, well, and then a related topic, of course, is, which is also one that I've gotten interested in through the introduction through Leslie Keene, is the whole notion of UFOs and all those anomalous objects that are out there. Like, what is that? And her sneak in a little plug for her book. I think it's Generals and Others, the bigger subtitle, Go on the Record. So she has chapters written by generals, people from other countries who recount their decades worth of experience running departments where all this information was categorized. And there's clearly so much evidence out there. It's almost hard to deny that that's possible. But in our world, when we have a government that was actively telling people, oh, no, that was nothing, and they were keeping everything hidden because they didn't want the public to panic, you know, it makes sense why we think they don't exist, because, you know, we have all the government telling us that doesn't exist. And, you know, in the day, people were saying, well, the earth is flat because everybody believed it. So there's, you know, we had people not believing in mediums because they didn't personally experience it. So they were like, how can this be possible? So we have learned as a group culturally through our lived experiences over the decades and centuries, but we're almost like an experiential culture. We don't believe it until we can see it or you know, we can pinpoint it.
But do you think we're born more balanced? We tend to be a fairly left-brain culture. Do you think people are born to be really balanced and our society and education repress our right brain abilities? Or what are your thoughts on that?
That's a good question. I think it really varies greatly by the way in which you're raised, right? It's the nature-nurture debate. And so when you think about the way most of us are raised on the nurture part, you know, we're put into schools, we're taught to learn all these things, memorize all these things. It's rote, it's resuscitation, it's spitting it back out. I mean, creative thinking isn't encouraged in grade school, high school, college even. What's rewarded is getting things right, that doing the formula, doing the math equation correctly, doing all these things that are structured and analytical, mathematical, rational. And so we don't embrace in this culture creativity. Some homes, yes, you know, and homes where maybe the parents are artists or musicians, they grew up in that kind of environment and that is welcomed. So I think we're disadvantaged, most of us, by the society and the homes we live in that way only, that we're not, our creativity is not encouraged or we're not, you know, no one teaches us to think differently. So we're all in the same kind of.
I definitely can relate to that from my childhood. I was very artistic. My parents encouraged that, but they mostly encouraged education. So going to the schools I went to, I had to stop doing every artistic thing I liked to do to focus on these very intense academics at like very competitive prep schools. So I gave up all my creativity.
Yeah, and it does kind of squish that out. And then if a decade or two or three goes by and you haven't, and then you kind of think, well, I'm not good at it. And I'm not good at it because I've never done it or haven't encouraged it much. And it's kind of like, should I start back at it now when I'm so good at these other things? Why don't I just keep doing that instead of trying to learn something new and be beginner's mind and not be so good at it? And so have you started to do any of those creative projects again?
I have, while writing my book. And then I want to get more. I worked in fashion right after school where I did styling, but I loved to make things all the time and draw. And that's really not something I've done. I started a little bit during quarantine. I had a childhood kind of collector's item doll's house that I outgrew and stopped making. And I started remaking it, made it beautiful for hopefully future children one day, and got really into it. And I was like, I haven't done this in like 15 years, maybe longer, you know, because I probably stopped around 10, stopped doing all my art projects.
All right. Well, I'll turn the tables on you, Liz. So if you were to ask your right brain the question, how can I encourage and develop my creativity? I'd be interested in your answer. You want to try it?
Yeah, I'd love to.
So as you recall, the process is to put the pen in your non-dominant hand.
Let me get a pen because I'm like millennial techie and I'm doing all my notes and everything just on my phone. Okay, take me through it.
Okay, so I think that what I'd like to do first, if you're willing, Liz, is ask you that question through the lens of your conventional thought process. So presumably with your dominant hand first, what could you do now to encourage your creativity? Write down whatever comes to mind. And I think what we'll be doing for this is kind of validating with your audience that you wouldn't have just thought of this otherwise, because you're now actively thinking about it, you're considering possibilities, you're writing things down. And this is typically what you would have. That would be it until you came up with something else at another time or another possibility. And then we'll be able to potentially show by switching hands that you're not just switching hands, but if you allow it and to switch brains, that something else can occur. So then with the pen in your non-dominant hand, as you recall, and I you have the advantage that I took you through the whole why of this and the science and, you know, in a 20-minute discussion and presentation. So some people they need the science before they can just do it. But since you already know that, for those that just want to go to the how is to put the pen in your non-dominant hand. Importantly, suspend disbelief, let go, maybe close your eyes, take a breath or two, imagine your brain flatlining, no judgment. And the question to you is, how can I encourage, stimulate my creativity? Boom. Write down whatever comes to mind. It may be a second. It may take 60 seconds. Maybe one thing. Maybe four things. Just allow it to flow from brain to hand to page.
This was interesting. I did get two different things somewhat. So the first one, I wrote, go back to art projects, make things crafts. And the second one, I basically got the same thing, except I got doing crafts with both hands, like balancing your brainwaves. And I saw all the stuff I did visually. The first time I was just thinking it. And then the second time was all the visual crafts I did as a kid came back to me very visually. And I wasn't getting in sensorially, like I felt my hands doing them the way I used to. And I didn't feel any of that in the left brain. It was just logical. So this whole sensorial and the emotions I felt making them came back to me.
Yeah, well, and that's a great distinction, because emotions are also considered a right brain function. So thank you for your willingness to take it on and be vulnerable there. And I think you got a very good test case example of left brain thinking and right brain thinking. You know, you got a perfectly good answer that you thought about conventionally, you wrote it down. And then when you switch brains, you just got more, you know, you got the second hand involved and then you've had the feeling and the sensation. And frankly, I would guess that you're much more likely to potentially do this now, because when you felt those things in your brain, you're like, oh, I like that. I like the way I felt. I like what happened. And I like what I saw myself doing. So I would imagine you're going to be way more likely to do it now.
And I'm feeling my hands, like I'm feeling all the physiological, what I loved about making that. And that it was totally blocked till I got to the right hand, even though the words were pretty much the same. None of the like whys of what it felt inside me and in my hands and brain were there until I opened the right brain. So that's really interesting.
Yeah. And I think that as a banker, I can also say that what I would typically, and if I was probably listening to this podcast right now, be thinking, that's too good to be true. There is no way that in 60 seconds, she can do something as simple as presumably switching hands and activating her right brain and getting something that's meaningfully better as a solution. And so the banker part of me would also be like, if it's too good to be true, it isn't true. So you really have to power past that and give it the great part is it's not as difficult as learning how to ride a bike. It's not as difficult as learning how to play a guitar, learn a second language, start to run, start to swim, change up the behavior. This is so incredibly simple and profound, but we have to be open-minded enough to try it at least once and give it a chance.
Yeah. And it just seems like it opened more of my senses, which kind of, you know, would make sense, excuse the double, but not meant as a pun, but would make sense that, you know, maybe my right brain more, well, I was saying the same message the way my left brain interprets it, which is verbal, you know, go get the crafts. Where would you get them? Which crafts? My right brain is just like, you know, it's the feeling of it. And my hands are itching to make it.
Yeah. And maybe, but, and maybe a second challenge to you would be, before you wrap this podcast, that you edit back in weeks from now, or whenever that might be, days from now, the if you choose to do it, that you give a footnote and say, oh, this is actually what happened.
I think I will.
Hi, everyone. So here is an update on what I have and have not done regarding crafts and this experiment exercise since my conversation a few months ago with Bill Donius. I have not done the arts and crafts we were talking about that I wanted to get back to, but I had been dealing last year with this really crazy experience with a squatter in my Brooklyn apartment. As a lot of you know, I live in LA and New York, and it's a really long story. I'm happy to share the story with anyone who reaches out and emails. Maybe I will talk about it further down the line. But regardless, the case was finally closed and I got my apartment back. So I've been doing lots of creative decorating and fixing it up. And that's just been so much fun. And it's felt like how I felt when I did arts and crafts as a kid. And how I wanted to feel and remembered feeling during this exercise. So once it's done, I really do think I'm going to get back to some of the other projects that I want to do.
So I want to end on two final questions. What would be like your dream experiment to get to go do on all of this? Or maybe you are planning to do this experiment.
Well, I am planning on doing the experiment where we're in inquiring now, and it's broader than just right brain activation. We're trying to look toward finding out where, if there is a part in the brain, not probably if, but the part of the brain that mediumship exists in and makes possible, how the right brain can kind of activate and respond that way. Is it one tiny little part in the right brain? Is it maybe not in the right brain at all? Is it someplace else? It's always just been thought to be there. And I think that would be really fascinating to get more information about that. Maybe why it worked for some and not for others would be interesting as well. And my hope would be in the future that this process would be taught beginning in grade school. Because then the experiences that I've had where I've gone into grade schools, high schools, colleges, university, after grad programs, and as well as companies on. I say grade school because so much negative stuff can happen in grade school that if you had a way to get to know yourself better and you had a way to understand your strengths and weaknesses and kind of the deck that you were dealt and tap into the wisdom of that right brain, it's there in grade school. It's already present. And I've seen great things happen in both advantage and disadvantage communities where kids are able to tap into this and get the wisdom that is there for them.
And then one final question before the closing. What would you say is the biggest what the fuck you've seen or experienced in all of this, if you don't feel you've already answered that?
In terms of this podcast or in my whole life experience?
In your life experience, you can either share something directly related to this work or something maybe that would tap into right brain, like a sign.
It would just be simply that this is even possible. I mean, it just is so, initially, it just seemed so way out, so much so that I didn't even talk about the fact that I was doing it for the first 10 years, partly because I was a public company bank CEO and I didn't want people to think I was crazy, come for me with the white jacket and take me away. But it really took the 200 interviews to see that it could work for other people, but that still was mind-blowing. I mean, it just defies logic to think that we can access a different part of our brain. And Sperry's discovery was not that they're separate, that they're independent. The left side is independent from the right. Hence why we can get these answers that are not, oftentimes they're vastly different, you know, they're from an independent place. So that's still, even all these years later, that still is a WTF for me.
I'm so sorry to kill you. I have one last question. I don't think this has been done, but you know, the people who've had either surgeries or brain injuries where their corpus callosum is split and their right brain and left brain do not communicate. Have you ever done this activity with one of them?
That's a great one. And 5 years ago, I met a person, and she's related to a friend of mine. She's the daughter of a friend of mine. And I asked her if she would be willing to do this experiment with me and try it. And she declined. But then what I've learned is that there's a whole support group that exists nationwide for these people that have a severed corpus callosum. Actually, they actually typically don't have one, I think is what it is. They're just separate functions. And I could see from the way that she reacts in the world, she reacts differently in the world. And you know, when you are meeting her and talking to her, that she's, you know, just shows up neurally different. And she said she was going to introduce me to some of the people in that huge, yeah, I think there are hundreds that go to an annual conference every year. So that's still on my list for getting to, you're reminding me that I need to go back and talk to her and see if something has shifted and she's willing to put a request out and if somebody's willing to try it.
Well, if they do, I would love to have you back and talk about the results of that, as well as the brain, you know, after you do the brain experiments with the neuroscientist about what part of the brain.
Yeah, would love to. I enjoyed this very much, Liz. I appreciate you from meeting you initially and your sense of combination sense of wonder and skepticism and excitement and just easy to talk to, fun to talk to. So for all those reasons, yes.
Hi, I'm interrupting the podcast episode for this week's listener question. So Olivia asks, what's the difference between a psychic and a medium? I've always thought they were the same thing, but it seems you've mentioned in your podcast, they're actually two different things. Hi, Olivia, that's a good question. I actually used to think they were the same too, but they're not. So there is a quote that I learned by Lloyd Auerbach, and it seems to be kind of the general consensus in parapsychological research. All mediums are psychic, but not all psychics are mediums. So what's the difference? The difference is in a medium reading, the medium is communicating with the consciousness of our deceased loved ones. In a psychic reading, the psychic or the psychic medium is reading a living person's energy. That's when, if you went to get a psychic reading about yourself, that's when they would know things such as occurrences that happened in your past, what's going on with your love life, finances, career, health. Those are the type of questions people usually want answered in a psychic reading. In a medium reading, that's when either people want to communicate with someone who's passed away. That's when researchers are studying, or if you personally want to see for yourself, is it possible that we survive bodily death, that our consciousness survives in some way? And so those are two different types of readings. I will go into more in other episodes about how you can tell which is which, and some of the research done on both. But a really interesting episode where I talk about this is episode 31 with Mark Bacuzzi, one of the co-founders of Winbridge Institute, because they have studied the difference between the two types of readings and how do we know a medium's not just reading us psychically. And I think there's a lot of interesting research on that topic, which I'll go into in later episodes. If you have a question you want me to answer, send it to hello@wtfjustwhatis.com. happened.net and put question of the week in the subject. I know I usually say first names, but if you want to be completely anonymous, let me know. And feel free to reach out anyway, even if you don't have a question. I can't wait to hear your questions and hear from you.
Thank you so much. And where can our listeners find you? Remind them the name of your book, where they can follow you, all of that.
Sure. My website is my name, williamdonius.com. I'm on LinkedIn as William Bill Donius, Facebook, William A. Donius, Instagram, Bill Donius, and Amazon has the book. Simon Schuster published it, and you can contact me through the website as well.
Remind us the name of the book, too.
Thank you for that. Thought Revolution, How to Unlock Your Inner Genius.
To get more information on what the fuck just happened, go to WTFjustHappened.net. There, you can order my book, WTF Just Happened, A Sciencey Skeptic Explores Grief, Healing, and Evidence of an Afterlife. You can learn all about how I came to conclude that there most likely is an afterlife, but you can also learn about the early stages of my grief and the amazing, fascinating people I met along the way. You can read about how much I harassed the mediums and scientists trying to get evidence to see if the mediums were cheating and see if what everyone was saying actually was true. You can also subscribe to our newsletter to stay updated on any new developments and any interesting new what the fuck updates. So if you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. It makes such a difference, especially for a new podcast like this one. And if any of you have had a crazy what the fuck yourself, have any questions, feedback, or just want to say hey, reach out on either Instagram at WTF_just_happened_ or email me at hello@WTFjustHappened.net. I love hearing from all of you. It makes my day hearing your stories and questions and feedback and all of it. And remember, you don't have to draw any final conclusions as you wonder, what the fuck just happened?